You are listening to Irish Radio Canada's Home and Abroad, and I'm delighted to be connecting with Roisin O'Donnell. And Roisin had a book that was launched about maybe 2 months ago here in North America and Canada, Nesting. And I read it earlier on the year, and I found it intriguing for a whole load of reasons. And I'm delighted to get to talk to Roisin about it, because it's the story of what would be emotional abuse, coercive control, and a whole lot of issues surrounding that. And there were a number of books that I've read recently that would be covering these type of topics in different ways. And in this situation, young couple, North Dublin, and she is being very much coercively controlled, and she resorts to ultimately leaving. And that's where it gets fascinating, because the system is something that, I must say, I found horrendous when I was reading about it. And I have no doubt that what Roisin was writing about is the way the system works. And I'm not going to go any farther on that just at the moment. I leave to Roisin. Roisin, ta fáilte rath.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
So, did I cover that reasonably okay?
You did, yes, thank you. It's always a little bit difficult, I find, to summarize Nesting. You know, you did a great introduction yet there, setting up this scenario, because it's about this woman who's trying to leave a coercively controlling relationship, but it's very much about what happens from that point onwards, when the moment when she leaves, and the journey she finds herself on, I suppose, because she doesn't have anywhere to go. Her family are living in England, and she's not able to easily get over to them, and she doesn't have anywhere else to go, so she ends up living in emergency accommodation in a hotel. And much of the story is really about her search for home, her search for a better life for herself and for her children. And I find it hard, because when I'm talking about it, I feel like that it sounds very bleak, but when I was writing it anyway, it was very important that it is a story of hope. You know, there is a lot of light in it, and moments of humor and moments of respite, and it really is about this woman's attempt to, I suppose, to regain her independence, could we say, to take back the life that has very much been taken away from her by this controlling partner.
I thought in reading it that you were very, and I'm using the word in a soft way, but that you were very kind to the husband. And by that I mean that this the system and even the process allowed the husband to retain the home while you have a young mother with children, turned onto the street, and as you say, looking for emergency accommodation. And that was, that nowhere along the line were there checks and balances which would say, hold it now, why is she going through what she is, and why is he doing what? And this he being a government employee.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that's the reality. I mean, that's not me being kind on him. Believe me, that's very much the system. And because you see, they're renting. The thing that I suppose that I was really interested in and wanted to show the reality is that for people who are renting in Ireland, they've so little security, they've so few rights, because Kira, the protagonist, and her husband are renting their home, and she, as it's seen in the eyes of the law, I suppose, voluntarily leaves. She has no claim to that house, because it's not hers. You know, it's rented in both their names. It belongs to the landlord. So therefore, this is the reality. People find themselves in this. There's no way that she can get him to leave. It's up to her to try to find alternative accommodation. And unfortunately, due to the housing crisis in Ireland, which is just, you know, been just, the numbers have been skyrocketing in recent years, and it's extremely difficult for people to find somewhere to rent. The number of rented, you know, properties available to rent is just so low. So this is the the task that she's faced with, it became almost like a quest, I suppose. And I really did think of it in those terms, a bit like, you know, a sort of ancient medieval quest. But in this case, it's very much just the quest for home and for security. And it definitely is set against the backdrop of this system, which is just ripe for change, really. You know, it's desperate what people have to go through.
And him having to go through that, she had to go down to the office and sit on literally, like nearly gone into A&E or emergency, with the waiting to be seen. And that whole scenario, I say it was shocking to read it, and yet I knew what I was reading was, while it was supposedly fiction, was a description of the reality.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I mean, that's what I wanted for nesting. I wanted it to feel authentic, to feel validating for anyone who has been in that position, because I think so often books and films can be inclined to get it a bit wrong by sort of, I suppose, maybe romanticizing this idea that someone could just leave an abusive relationship and just kind of drive off into the sunset and then everything is okay. You know, quite often what happens at the start of nesting would be traditionally the end of a lot of books and a lot of films. So I wanted to start the story at that point and look at, you know, what is the reality? I mean, like, we know statistically it's the most dangerous time for a woman is when she actually takes a step of leaving a controlling partner, because someone who's that controlling isn't just going to kind of let go of control. But as you said, then the housing system, of course, amplifies that the situation that she's in. But you know, I did want to bring light into it as well. And even though she's in dire circumstances, Kira does meet lovely people along the way. You know, then the idea of found family and these friendships that she develops that very much kind of bring a lot of light into the novel. So I loved writing those passages.
And the to do or to give flesh to these characters, you know, when I talk to other authors, they will spend time researching, and like recently talking to Joseph O'Connor, he spent 8 months in Rome researching for his
Nice.
book, The Ghosts of Rome, and
I'm going to set my next book in Rome.
so for something like this, how did you go about living in some way what you were going to write about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I did a huge amount of research. It was, yeah, not as glamorous as traveling to Rome, but more having conversations, a lot of talking to a lot of people, talking to women who had lived in emergency accommodation, speaking to women who were survivors, of course, of control and were able to talk to me about their experiences. You know, I did a huge amount of research, a huge amount of reading as well. And talking with different professionals. I spoke to someone who was working with a woman's shelter, a woman's refuge, and she was an outreach worker. And that was really helpful for her to sort of talk to me about the patterns that she was seeing, the types of situations that women and families are finding themselves in. And as well, then the whole thing of living in emergency accommodation in the hotel, I really wanted that to feel very real. And I was just aware that so often we see the statistics in the news, but it kind of doesn't really mean anything. I wanted to know, like, what does it actually feel like to be living in a hotel, especially with young children? So I spoke, as I said, to a number of people, and I spoke to an academic who had spent years researching specifically like the impact on young families of hotel living, and talking to her about, yeah, just things like the practical arrangements. Like in the novel, Kira and her children, they have to use a different entrance to the hotel. They can't use the main entrance. They're not allowed to use any of the hotel facilities, all of this type of thing. So, you know, it was really a matter of having all these conversations and really trying to then, I suppose then the challenge is to filter that into fiction, right? Because nesting, it's not any one person's story. It's not, you know, none of the people I spoke to, their experiences do not directly feature in the book. So it was very much taking like the essence of these stories, and yeah, building it into a fictional story that ultimately would work on the level of fiction, that would engage the reader, you know, because that's really what I wanted, right? It's for the reader to feel engaged with the story, which I hope they do.
The concept of coercive control, I think, was pioneered very much in Ireland, as far as I remember. And consequently, I suppose, choosing to write about that because it is something that's not visible. You know, the concept that here you have what would be a stable middle-class couple, where he has a government job and they live in suburbia and they have their children. There's no bruises. There's no the woman that walked into doors. There's none of the Roddy Doyle on that, the having to make, hide stuff. So to what prompted you to go down this road?
I think it was just awareness of these, this type of domestic abuse that I had heard so much about, really. And when I first started writing Nesting, it was 2020, and it was the height of lockdown. And I remember just hearing so much on the radio about like the rise in the number of calls to Women's Aid. The thing that really sort of hit me actually was I heard a report that there was like initially a drop in the number of calls to Women's Aid during lockdown, but then as soon as lockdown was lifted and restrictions were lifted and people went back to work a little bit, the number of calls just went through the roof. So these women had obviously been like waiting for a safe moment to make that call. And there was just, you know, increasing reports about coercive control. It only became legally an offence in Ireland in 2019. So I suppose there was a lot of conversations around that. And what happened was in 2020, I actually got a phone call from a producer at Radio 1, RTE Radio 1, and I was asked to write a short story on the theme of independence. We were coming up around a centenary of Irish independence, and she was doing a series to commemorate that. So short story writers like myself were being asked to write something that would somehow reflect on what does independence mean in Ireland 100 years later. And as soon as I got that commission, I knew straight away really what I wanted to do, and it was connected with everything I'd been hearing about coercive control and how that impacts on a woman's independence. I mean, it's a total loss of independence really, isn't it? And then I wanted to kind of combine that with the statistics and all the news I'd been hearing about families losing their homes and living in emergency accommodation, because again, I couldn't think of anything really that impacts your independence more than not having a place of your own to live. So all of this combined, and I wrote a short story called Present Perfect, and it's available actually if your listeners are interested. It's called Spoken Stories is the series, and you can get that on the RTE player. And so my story is called Present Perfect, and it was just a day in a woman's life. That's what it was. The short story takes place over 24 hours in the life of a woman called Kira Faye, and she's living in emergency accommodation in the Hotel Eden, and she'd left a very difficult relationship. And the short story just was the highs and lows, just one day in her life, that was it. And it was read for radio by Siobhan McSweeney, who's of Derry Girls fame. I don't know if you saw Derry Girls fans over there. She's Sister Michael in Derry Girls. And she read the story, and that was that. I listened to it on the radio, but I just felt that it wasn't finished. Like for me, I wasn't happy. I wanted to know what would happen next. So I kept writing, really. Yeah, I kept writing, and I think that's it. That's the point at which the novel really, really took off. And yeah, I made a decision early on that, you know, in the short story, there was no physical abuse, there was no bruises, no blood and gore. There was none of the, I suppose, like the tropes that we're used to seeing in these stories. And I made that decision very early on that there wasn't going to be, this is going to show something different, a different a different form of control that is hard to capture, I suppose, because there's no physical signs. So it became then very much about the psychological and the emotional, which I suppose as writers, that's what we're interested in, really, isn't it? So it became very much an exploration of this, all stemming back to this key word, independence, which I think really is at the heart of it.
I guess you were pleased with the reaction that the book
There's been
got.
great reactions so far. No, I mean it's been lovely to see it's taken off in that way.
Yes,
Definitely.
rewarding, like for you, spiritually rewarding.
I don't know. I don't know. It's hard, isn't it? To know. I think it's just lovely to see the book meet, the reaction from readers, and I think that readers really complete the picture, and a book isn't really finished until you have it in the hands of readers. And no, it's been great to see. I wasn't sure what the reaction would be, just because there hadn't really been anything like this in Ireland anyway. There'd been very little in literary fiction about this type of subject matter, so it's hard to know really. But readers seem to be just word of mouth seems to be really helping the book to take off.
Brilliant.
So that's been great.
I'm sure you're working on the next one.
I've started working on something new.
Good for you, yeah.
So it's early days so
Yeah.
far.
You said just that this was coming out of COVID. If you were to put a timeline on it, how long would you say you spent, how long from start to finish on this, on nesting?
Well, I mean, including the time when I was sort of thinking about it and including all the editing time, it was probably about, I'd say, 4 years, really, give or take. I think that the editing time is really important as well. I think that stems back from I suppose my work as a short story writer. Because I started out as a short story writer long before I wrote a novel. I'd been publishing stories for about 10 years in places like The Sting and Fly and The Irish Times. And I think when you work as a short story writer, you really develop that discipline of every word has to count. I'd be a fairly ruthless editor now of my own work. And I remember going back over nesting time and again. I suppose my technique as a short story writer would be to read the story aloud. I think the rhythm of it, the flow of it, that is really important. And I applied the same technique then to the novel. I used to read over the pages and make sure that it flowed, which I'm sure used to probably drive my editor mad because that obviously takes quite a long time to do that with a novel. It's easy to do that with a short story, but I used to say to my editor, "Oh, I'm just going to give it one more read through." And she'd think, "Oh, no, that'll take another 2 weeks." So that was it. But I was working full time as well when I was writing Nesting in my day job. I'm a primary school teacher and I have 2 young children as well. So it was, busy. But I'm a great believer in, if you want to write, using the time that you have and making it happen.
Indeed. Roisin, I'm going to let you go. I thank you so much for taking the time because I know with 2 young children, you've had a long day already. And congratulations. A wonderful book. The book is Nesting, Roisin O'Donnell. I would strongly urge that you go to independent booksellers and do a search and find where you can get it and support the independent booksellers that we have on our doorsteps. Roisin, thank you so much.
Thank you.